This is the Press Pass with Chris Ryan.
This is where you hear unique conversations with the best athletes, coaches, and general managers in sports.
I think you appreciate each and every one. Each and every one is special in their own way. And
I play with two guys that they were on top of their game on a nightly basis, and people get spoiled. You know, they saw Manny, they saw David, so they start taking people for granted.
An opportunity for me. I know I need to help my team now, so you know, the better I play, the better it'll be for us.
I think it's one of the most important things is focus and consistency.
And welcome to the Press Pass here on WKXL 1039, 1450, and NHTalkRadio.com. I am Chris Ryan. So please join us for the show. Press Pass tonight is presented by the Prescription Center, where the health of you and your family comes first. More information, check out prescription-center.com. And this segment of the show is brought to you by Douglas, Leonard & Garvey. If you've been injured, the most important decision you're going to make is who your lawyer is going to be. I encourage you to check out Douglas, Leonard & Garvey at NHLawOffice.com. Patriots looking to get back on track as they have fallen to 10-3 on the year, losing back-to-back games to the Texans and Chiefs. And the Cincinnati Bengals might be just what the doctor ordered. They are 1-12. As the Patriots go to Cincinnati. A little controversy around the Patriots this week as individuals hired by the Patriots to record the Cincinnati Bengals for film purposes last week were caught doing some things perhaps they shouldn't be doing in terms of shooting the sideline. We'll talk about that with Dave D'Onofrio, resident sports expert, coming up in the next segment of the show. But we'll focus on the football side of things here for the Patriots, their final road game of the season. And they are only one game ahead now of the Buffalo Bills for the AFC top spot. And they have Buffalo coming in next Sunday. The Bengals, as I mentioned, are 1-12 on the season. They lost last week 27-19 to Cleveland. And the only win of the season for the Bengals came against the New York Jets. You got that one right. It's here from Patriots head coach Bill Belichick, who says the Bengals are very Rams-like under head coach and former Rams QB coach Zach Taylor.
You know, there's certainly a strong Rams presence in what they do, and, you know, that was a little different than, you know, what they've had there the past few years under Marvin, but similar to what the Rams do, but of course it's different players.
Patriots running back Sony Michel says they're not hanging their heads after the two straight losses.
Yeah, trying to get better. You want to try to improve and get better as the season go on. There's a lot of more football to play. The good thing is, you know, we get another chance this week.
Patriots tight end Ben Watson talked about playing amidst an investigation into their recent videotaping incidents.
Honestly, nothing else matters on the outside. So the guys in the room, we got to put these pads on, these helmets, and we got to go out there and hit people and do all that stuff. It really doesn't matter what type of controversy is going on out there.
And Patriots wide receiver Mohamed Sanu says they cannot afford to take the 1-12 Bengals, lightly.
The record doesn't say who they are. We've seen the film, and they got a lot of great players over there. I know on the front seven, Geno, Carlos, you got guys on the back end, young guys making plays like Christian Bates, Sean Williams, those guys. So we got to go and play ball.
Patriots and Bengals Sunday at 1 p.m. in Cincinnati. Let's switch gears to hockey before we get in-depth on the Celtics. We'll talk with Jason Tatum and also Tobias Harris of the Sixers on Al Horford's impact on the Sixers so far this year. Bruins been reeling a little bit as of late. They're still a really good hockey team, and it's them and Washington in terms of quality teams in the Eastern Conference. But the Bruins have been losing. They have dropped five straight games, and that coming off of an eight-game winning streak. Patrice Bergeron and John Moore scored against the Lightning, but that was it. Goal scoring has been an issue for the Bruins, and they've lost back-to-back games in that five to quality opponents, falling to the Washington Capitals again in a close 3-2 game. But overall, you look at the structure of the Bruins and the quality of their goaltending and the quality of their team, and I am not very concerned about this group, and I think the Bruins are going to right things pretty quickly. Here is Bruins head coach Bruce Cassidy.
We gave up two goals tonight. We won neutral zone faceoffs. Harmless kind of plays that puck doesn't get in. We turn it over and we take penalties right after that against a potent power play. And you know, now it's in the net.
Here's Bruins goaltender Tuukka Rask hoping that the team can end the losing streak on Saturday in Florida.
You don't want to lose too many games in a row. You want to put a stop to it. But you know, it's been a tough road trip. We got one more game left and maybe or hopefully we can finish it off on a high note and then go home for, you know, I think we got a good, nice homestand before Christmas and kind of feel good about ourselves.
So the Bruins are actually nearing the halfway point of the season. The Celtics, meanwhile, have hit the quarter point of the season. And Celtics have had a really good start to this year. They are right now a team that is one of the top three in the Eastern Conference. There's some questions where they're going to get there. They have. They've lost now twice to the 76ers, but you see them coming off that 115-109 loss, and you don't feel like there's, you know, this big gap between the Sixers and the Celtics, or the Bucks and the Celtics. Celtics are right there. And I don't think a lot of folks came into this season thinking that they were a championship-caliber team, but they are, again, right there. Joel Embiid was the story. He had 38 points, 13 rebounds. Celtics got good scoring from their bigs, but couldn't really stop Embiid, as Enes Kanter had 20 points off the bench, and Daniel Theis had 16, but still falling short of what Embiid put up. Tobias Harris, you'll hear from in a little bit, had 23 points. Kemba Walker led the Celtics with 29, and Sixers have been playing better. They've won 12 of their last 14. Celtics dropped two straight back-to-back, Indiana and the Sixers. Here's Celtics head coach Brad Stevens.
You know, they especially started out hot in the first quarter. But, yeah, we just gave – we weren't good enough at the rim probably on the other end of the court. And then, you know, you got to – just didn't convert, you know, some of those that you usually convert.
Joel Embiid was called out by Shaq and Charles Barkley, which a lot of times results in players rolling their eyes or laughing that off. But Embiid took the criticism to heart, said he had to be better, and he was in this game. Here's Sixers head coach Brett Brown.
The guys were great down the end. Joel was just significant in all regards to help us pull that off.
All right, Brett Brown right there. We're going to get our interviews now and start things off with one of the most significant players on the Boston Celtics, and that is Jason Tatum. And as I mentioned before, you look at the Celtics this year, and there was some question as to where they were going to be. Most people, myself included, thought they'd be a playoff team, but were they going to be one of the top teams in the Eastern Conference? And this year, the answer has been yes. I mean, they're at 17-7 on the year. They're a game back of Miami, who's been a surprise. They're in the second spot, but the Celtics beat the Heat a couple games ago in Boston. Looked pretty impressive in doing that. I don't feel the Heat are legit. I feel the Sixers, the Bucks are legit, and the Celtics are legit, and then everybody else in the Eastern Conference is either okay or bad. And that's kind of the situation and the landscape there. And, you know, we've seen two players in particular, in Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, step into bigger roles this year. And if the Celtics were going to be successful, you know, you look at the construct of their roster, and Jason Tatum is going to have to be a 20-point-a-game guy. Gordon Hayward is going to have to be close to that. And, you know, Kemba Walker was going to have to come in and be a 20-plus-point-a-game guy. And that has taken place. Jaylen Brown's going to have to be close to that. You have Jaylen Brown, 19.3 points per game. Gordon Hayward, 17.5. Jason Tatum is at 20.6. And Kemba Walker is at 23.1. And as we talk about with Jason Tatum here, who has now gotten to an all-star level, if he can move his shooting percentage up just a little bit and make some more either easy shots or find, you know, that aspect of a mid-range game, and get his percentage up, or stick more three-pointers and get up to, you know, 45% instead of 40.6%, then we're talking about superstar range. He's at all-star range right now. Here's my conversation with Jason Tatum.
Just, has this been your most enjoyable season to date, you know, combining all the different elements of having personal success, team success, the chemistry that seems to exist in the room?
I mean, it's early. It's only my third year. Obviously, when we almost went to the championship, that was fun. Mm-hmm. But no, it's been a good year so far. Hopefully, we keep it up.
What has led to, you know, the success you've had this year? You obviously had an additional, more of a role with the team this year, more of a defined role, the ball in your hands a little bit more. Are you where you want to be, given, you know, the success you've had?
You know, I feel like everybody expects and wants to get better each and every year. You know, as you get older and more experience in the league, you know, you should want to be better than you were last year. So just trying to keep getting better year after year.
You've talked about where you want to go and being one of the elite players in the league, and it seems like, you know, percentage-wise, and you're shooting about 5% off from being at that 25 to 30 point per game margin. How do you get to that, and do you think about, you know, how you get that extra, you know, 5% in terms of your shooting?
You know, just watch a lot of film, watch what you think you can do better on, and, you know, all your shots, misses, and makes, things like that.
What are the ways that you see yourself improving as a defensive player? Because to me, that's one of the biggest differences in your game from year one to now, is the way that you're defending both on the ball and off the ball.
Just, you know, I played a lot in the NBA so far. Just got more experience, knowledge of the game, knowledge of players' tendencies, and, you know, just more comfortable out there and more physical.
One of the best things to watch this year has been how you and Jalen have played off of each other. And is that a dynamic that you always expected would develop, and perhaps took some time to get to that point? But your games are games that complement each other and allow for each other, it seems, to grow in your own kind of separate space.
Yeah. You know, two young guys that just want to keep getting better. And, you know, we got a long way to go, but, you know, we both want more.
The final thing is on Tice and the role that he has had this year, and obviously playing against Al Horford tonight, and that was such a significant loss for this team. But seeing the way that he has stepped in, has he been perhaps the most underrated aspect of the success you've had so far?
Yeah, you could say that. Tice has been playing really well this year. Took on a lot larger role than last year and the year before that. So, Tice.
Thanks, dude.
All right, Jason Tatum right there. Also talked with Tobias Harris, who is an all-star caliber player, about the impact that Al Horford has had. He didn't play in the game last night, but he did and has had an impact on the Sixers, both on and off the floor. Here's Tobias Harris.
Steve, just curious as to the role that Al Horford has had in this team. He's obviously a great glue guy of the Celtics, was able to bring a lot of folks together. How does he work within, you know, the confines of your team structure?
No, I was joking. No, he's, you know, he's amazing. Just his professionalism. You know, like, he's obviously a vet in the game, so his voice goes a long way in the locker room, and just in terms of his leadership qualities that he's instilled through the years. And now, like, you know, you take the combination of the years and the body of work that he has, it really shows in every day how he comes to work and how he approaches it. He's even keel guy all around, every single day, ups and downs. And I think everybody respects that about him. So he's done just a great job of being able to kind of like lead by example and with words at different times throughout the season.
There's a lot of hyperbole in sports, but is Al in a lot of ways the perfect teammate, both on and off the court, and how he complements each other, gives what the game needs?
Oh, yeah, 100%. You know, perfect teammate. He walks the walk and talks the talk too, you know what I mean? Like, where, you know if something is coming out of his mouth to be said, it's, you know, it's very, it's justified just by his professionalism and how he goes about his own business day after day. So I think, a lot of guys, you know, when you go into different teams and this organization, he's a great guy to have, just because we got young guys coming up that can also learn from him and understand his path and how he's gotten here.
When he left the Celtics, there was obviously the loss of him leaving the team, but also the feeling that he was going to the Sixers and he could potentially be the piece that you guys needed. Was that the feeling that you know, you and the other guys in this locker room had, that, okay, this guy is the piece we needed?
100%. That's a big reason why, you know, guys decided, myself included, to re-sign. And, you know, just seeing what we've been doing so far and what we plan to do going ahead, I mean, this is, he's a big part of that.
The final thing is, a lot of teams that have all-star, superstar-type players, it doesn't necessarily work because of the way the individuals, play similarly. Do you feel like all the individuals that are stars in this team kind of complement each other?
Yeah, most definitely. And I think we do compliment each other. And, you know, we compliment each other in more ways than we probably think. I think game after game, we're, like, figuring that out. So I think just, I'll say even myself, being able to go out there and play with guys like Ben, Joel, Al, like Jay Rich, you know, I'm seeing game as games progress, like different things that are good things out there on the court for us and how we kind of are thriving off each other a little bit.
Do you feel like you have to sacrifice or can you be yourself?
Well, me personally?
You personally or Ben or Joel?
I think like in any team, you definitely have to sacrifice for the greater good and, you know, that's what the good teams do.
Sweet. Thanks, Steve.
This is the Press Pass on KXL, tonight presented by the Prescription Center, and this segment of the show is brought to you by Douglas Leonard and Garvey. This is the Press Pass here on KXL 109, 1450, and NHTalkRadio.com. Brought to you tonight by the Prescription Center. Time to bring in our resident sports expert, Dave D'Onofrio from Boston.com, as we talk Patriots and Bengals, a little about the Celtics as well, and the Bruins also, as welcoming Dave to the program from Boston.com. Dave, how are you?
Doing good, thank you.
Good, appreciate you joining us for the show. So we'll start with the controversy surrounding the Patriots, and this is not necessarily, from a national perspective, at a fever pitch, the same way that you know, Deflategate or Spygate and too many gates. Anyway, but the this particular situation, you know, to me is, I don't know. Like it's because it's the Patriots. It feels like it's a little bit overblown. What have been your takeaways from this so far?
I think the Patriots being involved definitely makes it overblown. I mean, think back to a few years ago when the Steelers headsets were going out on opening night, and that became a big deal. That happens all the time across the NFL. But because it was in Gillette Stadium, there was assumptions of nefariousness. And the Patriots have made their own bed in that regard, don't get me wrong. I mean, Spygate, they were breaking the rules. I don't think in Deflategate, it hasn't been proven to me that they broke the rules, but when you keep getting wrapped up in these situations and these controversies, that's the territory you're finding yourself in. And I still don't, no one's been able to tell me yet what advantage you would get from filming the sideline when the signals are voiced in through headsets. And I don't know how that would help you. But it is a rule. They knew the rule. Whether or not the production people knew the rule, who knows? The TV people are obviously different than the football people. But you have to live by the rules, and there's probably a consequence to be paid. I think if this was a different team, it would have already been a fine slapped on them. Don't do that again, and we'll move on.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, the Patriots, given their reputation for tremendous attention to detail, I don't think that they can you know, get away with oops and oh, we didn't know that. I think that there's a feeling, and Belichick thrives on this, that they're always looking for competitive advantage. Remember, you know, when he found the a loophole to the rule earlier this year, and he was so proud of himself. And I think that when the NFL sees that, and they see when, and teams around the NFL see that, they see the Patriots' success, and they're skeptical of it. And as a result of that, when there is any what appears to be a minor mistake or rules infraction in which you cannot, you know, determine if there's an advantage to be gained, yeah, I think that they're going to hold the Patriots to a higher standard. And to be quite honest, I don't get why the Patriots don't get that. Like, this is they're playing the Cincinnati Bengals. Like, this is it is not like they're trying to gain an advantage against the Baltimore Ravens. It's the Cincinnati Bengals. This is the equivalent of, Richard Nixon, you know, having a vast conspiracy to break into the Watergate to defeat an individual that he was going to win, you know, pretty much every state against in the election. There is no way the Bengals are going to have success against the Patriots in this game if the Patriots play well. So that's what jumps out too, is that there's this, you know, this I don't know if it's this overtone that the Patriots have of, you know, on one hand saying we are superior to other teams in the fact that we are prepared, and but when there's something that comes up, it's like, oh, we didn't know that.
And that's where the target comes from. Well, that in, you know, 20 years of success.
Right.
So you're saying that you think they were trying to gain some advantage from this?
I don't know, but if it appears that I have no idea. I don't. Doesn't make any sense to me why they would be trying to gain some sort of advantage from it. But the Patriots have a reputation for always trying to find a nuance within the rules or within how things work in order to try to gain some sort of an advantage. And whether they are or not, there's also a feeling that they're kind of ahead of where everybody is, and that maybe there is something to be gained from shooting the sideline. Go ahead.
And you know, I get that. Maybe I'm naive. I get the cynicism. I just think, like, if you're going to do this, why do it, as you mentioned, why do it against the worst team in the league? Why do it on a sideline when the signals are said over a microphone? And why do it in plain view of the other team when you could just as easily and actually legally buy a ticket, put somebody in the seats with a really nice iPhone, and have them do it? You could buy a ticket right behind the bench and film the whole game, and that would be completely legal according to the NFL rules. It's the filming from the press box. If they're trying to circumvent something, I don't think they're dumb enough. They might be arrogant enough, but I don't know if they're dumb enough to do it in such, you know, clandestine fashion.
No, I think that's a really good point, but it gets back to the piece where basically you're saying that their video crew is not aware of what the rules of what they're supposed to be doing is, and that they're incompetent. And I don't know. Like, you get back to like Matt Chatham and all the other Patriots players from the past. You've talked about how supremely prepared they are. Players of the present talk about how supremely prepared they are for, you know, the moment. And any great organization prides themselves on tremendous attention to detail throughout the organization. And I think I look at the Patriots in that realm. So I have difficulty believing that the video crew was sent out without an understanding of what they're supposed to be doing. Given the fact that the Patriots have in the past had difficulties in regards to videoing and have controversies. So what you're saying is that they are incompetent and were sent out, and that the fact the Patriots did not give them clear details or understanding, or maybe there was just a mistake. Maybe the guy looked up for a little bit, and you know, he's, I don't know, but I have difficulty believing that the video crew was sent out without a knowledge understanding of what the rules are and what they're supposed to be doing.
I think part of it too is the reports say that it was a hired local team out there, basically a freelance job, and as someone who's done a lot of freelance writing over the last 9 or 10 years for some pretty good companies, I can tell you those people are often sort of left on an island, and you're trusted to, okay, we hired you because we know you can get us what we need. How you do it, how you make the arrangements, a lot of that, at least in my experience, has been left up to the freelancer. So if they just got an assignment and that was their thing to do, I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't get much instruction beyond that, especially instruction related to, like, the NFL rules. It would help. I mean, I'm not saying it's not it's an indication of incompetence. I just think it's a piece of incompetence that you can blame the Patriots for, but I guarantee you 90-plus percent of other organizations in the same situation would suffer from the same incompetence.
So, I don't – again, if the Patriots have had – Bill Belichick, as evidenced by his response to this, you know, is very focused on this aspect of what has, you know, transpired in the past. And you would think that there would be some sort of a, you know, an acknowledgement of that, and that there would be instruction that is given. Like, it's if, like, you know, you've had I hear your point, actually, because, you know, let's say there was a plagiarism scandal which took place at the Washington Post, And you're hired by the Washington Post to write about the Redskins when they come into New England. I doubt that the editor is going to be like, hey, Dave, don't plagiarize, okay? I don't think that's going to take place. But still, like, you would think that in this particular circumstance, given that there is rules that you're supposed to follow, and you're hiring a freelance crew, and you've had problems in the past, and you have this, you know, attention to detail as an organization, you would think that you'd want them to, and given the Patriots' attention to detail, have an acknowledgement, understanding of exactly what the rules are of what they're supposed to be doing. Because it's, you know, writing an article about sports, when you've written articles about sports in the past, it's pretty straightforward. You know what to do. The rules of the NFL, if you're a freelance crew, is a little more intricate than that.
Yeah, and I think that's a good point. And I think that if you just look at how that would work and who would be responsible for that, and maybe who deserves to take the fall for it, if that's what happened. You know, for Boston.com, if I am writing a freelance piece for them or for the Globe or whoever, and I do something wrong, I don't think it should be John Henry that's held accountable for that. He's the owner. He's at a higher level. I don't even think it should be the publisher. Maybe the assignment editor who was supposed to pass along the word, or the sports editor or whoever. That's what I'm thinking, is like that this does not fall on Kraft. It does not fall on Belichick. It probably falls on someone else. And I'm guessing maybe they were told, you know, we had this controversy in 2007, 12 years ago now. Let me give you a quick refresher, and here's what you can't do. Maybe someone was supposed to pass along that word and didn't. I just don't think that responsibility would be Belichick's. I think it would be some guy we've never heard of who's probably making $45,000, or should I say was making $45,000, because he's probably out of a job at this point.
That's Dave D'Onofrio, our resident sports expert here on the program. I am Chris Ryan. This hour of the show is brought to you by ARP New Hampshire, as well as the Concord Food Co-op. And this segment of the program is presented by Raph Young and Pignatelli and RathLaw.com. We're inside the Concord Photo Service Main Street studio. Let's get to the game itself. Patriots are reeling a little bit at this point. They're coming off two straight losses. They have a record of now 10-3 on the season. They're facing a team that, as we mentioned before, is the George McGovern of the NFL, to use the Watergate-Nixon comparison. And they are, in a situation where they need to win a football game. The Bengals are 1-12. Patriots are 10-3. This would appear to be, on paper, a game where the Patriots, you know, find their offense and get going. And if they can't do that, then, you know, there's continued concern, more red flags, and I think that a lot of the the naysayers about this Patriots team, you know, are 100% correct. Not in terms of whether they're going to win or not; they're going to win the game. But if they if the offense is unable to find itself and put drives together,
yeah, I'm done looking at the opponent, at least for now. Maybe in the playoffs I'll change my mind. But these last three games to me are about the Patriots, and it's not that the Bengals can't stop the run. It's not that the Bengals stink in pretty much every area. I want to see what the Patriots can do and what the Patriots are capable of exploiting in a team. I want to see what the Patriots, you would think going up against a 1-12 team, this is where the Patriots identify for us what they believe they do well. So let's see what it looks like. Let's see if it's pass heavy. Let's see if it's balanced. Let's see if it's run heavy. My entire focus Sunday is going to be on them and what they do. And this is not like the Dallas game or the Philly game where you're going in the road or you're playing in the rain and you get a win and you move on. You take it, you appreciate the mental toughness, and you accept the grind. This is a game where you have to look convincing, in my opinion. You need to restore some confidence within that locker room. You need to end the losing streak. There's a lot on the line here, just beyond what like a 13-10 win would look like. You need to be better than that, and that's the expectation.
Let's talk Celtics. Celtics had a big game last night against the Philadelphia 76ers. Al Horford returned to the TD Garden, but did not play. Sixers won 115-109 as they made plays late in this game, and the Celtics did not. Kemba Walker was really good. We have 29 points for the Celtics. Ennis Kanter had 20. Joel Embiid was called out by Shaq and Charles Barkley, which usually results in eye-rolling for players. But for Joel Embiid, he took it to heart and said he needed to be a more dominant player, and he dominated the Celtics. He had 38 points and 13 rebounds. You know, it's interesting because we talked about this the other day, that I feel that, you know, the Celtics are missing a physical big that can make a player like Embiid have to compete at both ends of the floor. And Tice was good in this game. He ended up with 16 points and has been one of the more underrated players on this Celtics team. Cantor was good. And those two still combined, though, to have less points than Joel Embiid.
Yeah, I thought Cantor, especially in the second half, was really good offensively, but they couldn't stop the big plays at the other end, and that was disappointing. Maybe it is a physical guy that they're lacking. I think Cantor could use his body a little more than he does. He's a big,
strong
dude. But you know, that's not his game. So maybe in a role like he's been this season, where he's not limited minutes, but in spots, and he comes in and gives you a jolt offensively, can score down low, can do a little bit of the dirty work, but I'd like to see him do more. I don't know if I get enough of that from him.
Yeah, I'm interested in you know, your takeaways as to where the Celtics are at this point, because I feel like I am just extremely pleased with the way the team has played this year. And you know, we wondered if they could be a top three team in the Eastern Conference, and you know, the question has been answered as an affirmative yes with the way that Tatum Brown only had 8 points last night and wasn't great. But the way that Tatum and Brown have come together, Kemba Walker has been, you know, strong for them. Gordon Hayward was back last night, and you know, he played well. I see a lot of positives for the Celtics team so far this year, and I was unsure as to how they were going to be able to perform, particularly on the defensive end. And as I said before, I still have some, you know, concerns there. But Marcus Smart wasn't there last night, so I really like where the Celtics are at.
Yeah, you know, I had this epiphany last night where I remembered back to the first time they played Philadelphia, which was opening night, and thinking during that game, like, well, they're not going to win this. This is a tough way to start the season. Hopefully they can recover pretty quickly. We'll see. Last night, as I was watching that, I kind of realized, like, okay, now I think this is a game they should win. Like, this is a
yes.
game that, not, and it's not just because they're at home. It's because they've been better than the Sixers to this point in the season. No Horford, no Smart, but I tuned in last night thinking, like, you know, this is a game that, yes, I think the Celtics can and should win. And that, to me, is a shift from where we were a couple months ago, because I thought Philly was, you know, one or two in the East. Now I'm less sure about them, but I feel like the Celtics, if you're looking at top three, if you told me the top three was Philly, Milwaukee, and Boston, I would agree with you. I think that that's where the Celtics are at, and credit to them.
I agree. I think that the only team that is clearly ahead, and again, this is a you know, interesting statement given the fact the Celtics have lost twice to the Sixers this year, but I feel like the only team that is ahead of the Celtics right now is Milwaukee. Milwaukee is ahead of everybody at this point with the way they're playing. So credit to the Celtics. And yeah, it was a game that, you know, you thought the Celtics should win last night, but you don't leave the game feeling dismayed about the way that you know, the type of team that the Celtics have. Let's talk about the Bruins briefly. Bruins lost last night to the Lightning. They've been reeling as of late, difficulty scoring goals. But I'm in the same spot with them as I am with the Celtics. I've seen enough in the body of work so far for the Bruins this year that I look at this and I'm like, this is just is a losing streak. These things happen during the course of a season. I don't see any, you know, significant glaring issues. There are problems. There's, you know, we've talked about it a lot this year. The Bruins struggle with secondary scoring. But I don't look at the Bruins situation and say, oh, this is a big red flag.
Absolutely agree with you. Based on where they started, yeah, this seems alarming, but we sort of saw it coming, where they weren't going to keep up that pace of ridiculous winning percentage throughout the whole year. They weren't going to be able to just get goals from Pastrnak and Bergeron and Marchand to continue to win all year. This was coming. They're kind of getting back to their own level, but the thing is, I think their level is still, you know, a Stanley Cup Finals contending team, a Stanley Cup winning team. So that's where I expect them to be at the end of the year. This is just a point in time where they don't look like that.
And you look at the landscape of the NHL as well. The Capitals, and of course coming off a loss to the Capitals earlier this week. The Capitals are as good as the Bruins, and those are the two teams that are the class of the Eastern Conference. And then, you know, there's everybody else. Tampa's a team that has a ton of talent, and you're kind of wondering why they are where they are at this point. But the Islanders have played well, but the Islanders aren't there with the Bruins. Hurricanes have been good again this year, Penguins. But the fact of the matter is that the Bruins are 27-6 this year, so I'm not too concerned about that. Dave, as always, appreciate you joining us with the program.
Thank you.
This is the Press Pass here on KXL, presented tonight by the Prescription Center, where the health of you and your family comes first. This is the Press Pass here on KXL tonight, presented by the Prescription Center. And this segment of the show brought to you by Riverbend Community Mental Health and Choices NH Addiction Recovery Services. Riverbend wants you to know the treatment works. For more information, check out riverbendcmhc.org. Also, I want you to know that hockey interviews on the program are presented by the Concord Capitals and the Concord Youth Hockey Association. Get your youngster signed up to play hockey in this upcoming winter session by going to concordyouthhockey.org. We are at Waterville Valley Resort here on the program with Stacy Sullivan as we continue to move across the Granite State as ski season is well underway as we're going up the White Peaks Quad in our second run of the day. How's the opening been so far for Waterville?
The opening was great. We opened for the season on November 23rd with 10 total trails, two full runs top to bottom. So people were excited. Conditions were great.
Yeah, that's been a big factor across the state of New Hampshire so far. The conditions have been really good early on in the season, which is not always the case.
Nope, not always the case. Last year at this time, we were almost completely open. We haven't had as much natural snowfall this year, but our snowmakers have been working their magic and getting terrain open pretty quickly. So now we're at 100 open acres and 20 trails today.
Yeah, there hasn't been a lot of fluctuation in the temperatures, which is all pretty important in terms of being able to snowmake. Brent had a question. Go ahead.
How much people come in a year?
How many people come to Waterville Valley throughout the year, and how many do you expect on some of the busy weekends throughout the ski season? How many people do you get?
You know, I'm not actually totally sure on the total skier visit count yearly. I know on a good day, it's anywhere between 1,200 skier visits. A really busy day, it can be 4,000.
Wow. So, yeah, 4,000 probably on weekends, good conditions, yeah. Snow in Massachusetts and all those things in the January and February time period. What is generally the busiest month? Is it, in fact, January for you guys?
I would say February. Yeah, February school vacation week, Massachusetts particularly. We also get a group from the UK that comes over that week as well. So it's pretty busy in mid-February here.
So there's a lot of options here at Waterville. Last week we were at Cannon, and Cannon's a ski mountain, and there's not, you know, condos, there's not resorts, there's not the type of amenities that you have here at Waterville or at Loon. What proportion of individuals are the ones that kind of come in and ski for the day versus the individuals that are season pass holders, the people come up for a week to go on a vacation and stay at the resort? What's the different type of skier that you have here?
We definitely mostly get day trippers up here. A lot of people from Boston tend to come up. We do have a fair amount of season pass holders that own property in the valley, but Waterville Valley is only about 200 year-round residents. So a lot of people are homeowners that have a second home up here and season pass holders, but the vast majority are day trippers.
So snow is falling. We're heading into a cloud right now here on the quad. What are your favorite runs here, and are there different runs during different time periods, early in the season, late in the season, when snow has fallen, that you enjoy more?
Yeah, I love True Grit on a powder day. It's so steep and it's a lot of fun. The trails on Green Peak are also great when we have a lot of snow. It's like a classic New England peak over there. There's a whole bunch of different type of terrain. There's, you can jump off of rocks. There's small cliffs. We just put in a new glade over there this year, so that'll be really fun.
Yeah, how many people enjoy the glade skiing side versus, you know, the straight downhill speed? Is it the same type of person that likes both, or is there the glade skier is different than the the alpine skier, if you will?
I think they're different. Our glades aren't really marked, so it's kind of like a secret stash for people. So they're a lot of fun to find. But it's definitely a different feeling than just skiing groomers. And I think most of our clients here like skiing groomers. So we cater to that more than, you know, bumps and trees.
Right. And for, you know, people who aren't skiers, one of the, we're referring to glades is kind of skiing through the trees versus the groomers and alpine, which is kind of straight downhill skiing on trails that are well maintained. As we head up, and head up into more snowfall, sun glistening off to the left. What type of events do you have coming up at Waterville this year? Of course, last year was a big year for you guys. I really enjoyed coming out for the national championships, which is actually, it was run on this trail that we're going overhead, I believe, right now. Yeah. One of the trails was on. So what do you guys have coming up this year?
It's a quiet year this year, but we do still have some big events. We have the Harvard Carnival. I have to check the date on it, unfortunately, but that's going to be coming up, and that's going to have the top collegiate skiers here, so it is still a pretty big deal. We also have Boarding for Breast Cancer the first weekend in February. We have a handful of new park events. One of them is going to be Show Us Your Hits in the end of January. So that'll be exciting to have, because we have a whole new park set up this year where all of our parks are going to be located off the Poma, so it'll be cool to see.
Another question in regards to, this time snowmaking, where you have new snowmaking, and we're going to head off the lift here in a second, but new snowmaking has been put in. There's obviously a lot of different cost factors that go into a ski resort, but I assume that the snowmaking is one of the biggest dominating costs outside of perhaps employees and those costs.
Yeah, so when we put in this, our new snowmaking system, we actually found out that it was one of the largest purchases in the Northeast. So definitely a huge number goes into snowmaking and making sure the trails get open as quickly and as efficiently as possible.
So we're at Waterville Valley as we continue to explore New Hampshire's ski areas on the Oblivion Trail, which is an absolutely amazing trail. As it, you know, here as we're doing this in the morning, you're looking out towards the sun. Sun is hitting you on this side of the mountain, and you go off the backside after getting off of the White Peaks lift and kind of go in between the trees in a short type of a narrow trail. It expands afterwards, like a hairpin turn, which is cool, and goes straight downhill. This is one of my favorite trails here.
Yeah, Oblivion's great. It's definitely one of the favorites amongst our guests. It's a great trail for kids that are still learning. It's the first trail they tend to ski after they graduate from the Valley Run Lift, which is a green circle, and this is our easiest blue square on the mountain. So it's definitely a great progression to get people to the top of the mountain.
What type of skiers do you find most at the mountain? And we've talked, you know, before about, there's one of the major problems with skiing is it's difficult in the early going, and a lot of individuals will ski once, and like, particularly adults, like that's it. Do you find that most skiers are in intermediate, advanced? Where do you find that they, and that most of your guests are in terms of ability?
I honestly think we have a wide range of abilities here. We're definitely a family mountain. We were actually voted New Hampshire's family resort through Parenting New Hampshire this year. So we do get a lot of families that come that are teaching their kids how to ski. And our mountain is actually designed with progressive terrain that helps people learn. So
there, what does that mean, progressive terrain?
So it's sectioned off. So we have our easiest, we have the pasture at learning area. So it's sectioned off from all the harder terrain. So beginners aren't getting overwhelmed by people speeding past them. And then from there, they can graduate to Lower Meadows, which is a small double chair on the lower part of the mountain. And then from there, they graduate to Valley Run, and then up to the top of the mountain on White Peaks and on the trail we're on now, Oblivion.
All right, we are at Water Valley Ski Resort. We're continuing to ski here. We're skiing down Oblivion. We're going to head back down to the lift to try one of the other trails off the top of the mountain. I think we're going to do Tippy Canoe. Coming up next here on Hampshire Downs, we ski Waterville Valley, nestled in the White Mountains of New Hampshire. Talk about the views here a little bit later, because that's one of, in my view, the best parts of Waterville Valley is it's nestled right in the mountains, where other resorts are kind of looking out at the mountains. All right, so we continue at Waterville Valley, and this our third run of the day is going to be, I think, on Tippy Canoe. And one of the things that stands out to me the most about Waterville Valley is the views are as good, if not better, than any ski mountain in New Hampshire, because it feels like you're skiing into the mountains when you look around you. Waterville is set in the midst of a number of mountains, so it's like very different than any other type of feel you get, and one that I really enjoy when you look out and see the mountains filled with snow.
Yeah, we're located in the heart of the White Mountain National Forest. So you don't really see any roads around you or any towns. You can see the town of Waterville Valley, but other than that, you're just looking straight out at the Tri-Pyramids, which are 4,000 footers. You've got Tecumseh when you're going up the lift directly to your right. You can see Osceola. So you're just surrounded by mountains. It's really a great view.
Fun time at Waterville Valley as we continue to ski across the Granite State here on the Press Pass program. Tonight, the show brought to you by Riverbend Community Mental Health, and that segment of the show presented by Prescription Center. Thanks so much for joining us for the show. It's a pleasure to bring it to you. I'm Chris Ryan.